That's the way it was. They force you. They tried to force you.
My grandfather tried to force me, but it didn't help.
They tried to force. Today, that is, it is unheard of.
You're not allowed to force. Rabbi, you're not allowed to force.
It was not understood. Today, it's understood medically. Okay, it appears that it's a medical. It's a medical issue. And it was not understood. It was not understood years ago that you can't change a person. That's how the person is wired. That's how he's made. It was not understood. And today it's much, much better understood. You don't play games. This is the way the body has to function naturally. And if you're going to go and do things that are unnatural to the body, it's dangerous. Today this is understood. This is the way it is. No one today is forcing people to change from righty to lefty. It's unacceptable. But years ago it was not like that. You know, there's a story with Rav Feivel Cohen. Rav Feivel Cohen, the story is he was just nifter, Zechet Tzadik Levracha, and I went to school with one of his children, Avraham Yeshaya Cohen, who was in my class, and he told me the story himself that his older brother, when he was is it Binyamin? I don't know. He's a big rabbi now. Yes, he has a massive shul right around the corner. I don't know which brother it is. I have no recollection which brother. He said that when they were little children, one of his brothers was always using his left hand. They're Kohanim. Mm-hmm. And every morning breakfast, he was taking his left hand and was eating cereal with the left hand. So Rav Feivel Cohen, being a Pesach, tremendous Talmud Chacham, he was disturbed because that would mean that his child would be possible to do Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash.
But it could be a support.
Yeah, but Avodah, you want to be 100%, whatever. So he kept on telling his son.
My grandson.
Is a lefty?
All of them are lefties.
All of them are lefties. Okay, listen. Okay, listen. There's another person. The truth is, this idea that if you're lefty, you can't do Avodah, it's not so poshut. It's not so poshut, you can't do Avodah. It just means that when you do Avodah, you use your right hand. Okay, this whole concept of being a lefty, it's considered to be a bal mum. What's the mum? You're a healthy person who happens to have dominance in your left hand. There are some who want to explain that when it says a lefty is a bal mum, we're not talking about 10% of the population. We're talking about a very rare medical condition. Dr. Friedman explained to me, is where the entire body is reversed. We don't see this today. It's extremely, extremely, extremely rare where the whole body is reversed. Okay? How many people are there like this in the world? A one in a million? Not even? It's a very, and they can't even live very long. If anyone that has that defect, it's the body is not equipped to deal with it, and they have a very short lifespan. And or we're dealing with another type of lefty, which is, like I mentioned to you before, where there's a very pronounced, like a stroke victim, where there's a part of the body. It's a different, when Chazal say that it's a mum, it's not discussing the lefties that we have today. 10% of the population, and that percent, those people who are lefties, they can do Avodah. They just have to train themselves that when they do Avodah, they do with their right hand. Even though their right hand is not their dominant hand, so with training, and it's not so complicated that it's going to mess you up. Like you're dealing with writing, and you're dealing with, then you're saying over the rabbic, it can hurt the mind if you try to go. But this is something which is not necessarily going to go damage a person if they do the avodah. They learn how to do kabbalah sadam and zrika sadam with their right hand. It's not the end of the world. Okay, so it's not so posh that a person that's called a lefty is a balmum. You have to define the meaning of a lefty. In the medical world today, you go online, you can type in lefty, there's a massive, massive collection of literature from the secular world. What is a lefty? What exactly is a lefty? What is all about? You will discover the different categories of lefties. So when Chazal say that a lefty is a balmum, really? I'm a Baal Mum. Do I consider myself to be a Baal Mum because I'm a lefty? I don't think the average lefty would consider himself to be a Baal Mum. Why would you consider yourself to be a Baal Mum? Because you're a lefty, a regular person. So you write with your left hand, big deal. Whatever it is. But the perception is, it always used to be when I was a kid, is that a lefty is possible to do the Avodah. So Rav Feivel Cohen, he saw his son eating cereal with a spoon. Pretty good. He used a spoon. Was eating cereal with a spoon using his left hand. And he told his son, stop it. Don't use your left hand. You're going to ruin yourself. So the child, the good child, he obeyed. So he switched the right hand. Comes the next day, nochamo, left hand. And he gave him musar. And this went on until one day, a 5 o'clock walks in there. Avram Yeshayahu told me the story himself. He walked in the kitchen, and there was the son eating the spoon with the left hand. And the father looks at him, is about to scream at him, and the son takes the bowl of cereal and throws it on his father in frustration. Stop bothering me. He took the cereal and threw it at his father. So the father says, you want to be a lefty? Good for you. Be a lefty. I'm not going to bother you anymore. That is when his father gave up on trying to retrain him to be a natural righty. Okay, this is a big, big sugya. And people recently in this generation have come to really question, challenge, what do Chazal really mean that a lefty is pasul la'avodah? What exactly does it mean? Because he's a Baal. If Chazal would not say he's a Baal Mum, all right, maybe you, Baal Mum? Really? Really? You want to call lefty Baal Mum? Really?
Mum is big matri elokim.
So you have to be done. You have to be done, and especially the scientists, believe in the science, trust the science. They've done us a favor by presenting there are different types of lefties. Not every lefty is the same. Whole different. It's an incredible thing that comes out of this. Knowing the science, you know, it's something to discuss. They're going to be the hardliners that are going to tell you, no, lefty's a lefty. Jump off the bridge. Don't come near the Beis HaMikdash. But it's interesting. There is what to discuss. All right, now let's discuss another topic. Okay, that's the topic. That's I think it's a very nice topic. It's a parasha. Maybe we'll do more about tefillin later on in the week. But I want to discuss over another time, at least a little bit, the topic of shlichus. This week is a very important topic, even though this is not a very big popular topic to talk about in this week's parasha, about you learn the makar that shluchoi shel adam kemoisai. How do you know that? Where does that come from? It comes from the Karban Pesach. The Karban Pesach says, v'shachatu oisoi kol kahal adas yisro. So Rashi in this week's parasha, let me turn to the page. It's an interesting, very big topic of shlichus. It has many applications, which many yisoidos come from it. Just give me one moment. Here it is. V'shachat v'hoylcham l'mishmeres ad arba soyom ha'chodesh hazeh. V'shachatu oisoi. We're dealing here with the Korban Pesach. And you shall slaughter it. Kol kehal adas Yisrael bein harboim. The Korban Pesach was guarded from the 10th day of the month. Pesach Mitzrayim. Pesach Mitzrayim was designated on the 10th day of Nisan and was slaughtered on the 14th day of Nisan in the afternoon, after Chatzos, Bein Ho'arboim. And when the Torah tells Klal Yisrael to slaughter and it was eaten at night. Okay, it's an interesting, it's a very, very complex process. The Korban Pesach is a very complicated Korban. Pesach Mitzrayim, there were three parts. There are really more than three, but there are three basic parts. So is the designation. It was designated on day 10.
Right.
It was slaughtered on day 14 in the afternoon, and it was eaten on the night of 15.
Right.
There are three critical zmanim of the Korban Pesach. Pesach Doiros only has two of those three. There is no requirement designated on day 10, but the other two requirements remain in place. It is slaughtered on 14, and it is eaten on the night of 15. Two different zmanim. Now, when it says that you shall slaughter it, the pasuk says, "V'shachatu oso kol kehal adas Yisrael." Every single person has to be a baki in shechita. That's an impossibility. Frekt the Gemara Kasha v'chi kulon shechatin. Is it possible, Rashi? These are the words of Rashi. Is it really Rashi quoting the Gemara? Gemara Masechta Kedushin. The Gemara Masechta Kedushin. Can everyone really do shechita? Everyone in Klai Yisrael do shechita? Ella, Mikan, From this pasuk we learn a principle that is so basic, so elementary, in Yadus, Elamikan, Sheshluchoi Shel Adam Kimoisai. An agent is just as good as you. It's a svar, it's not logical that every single person, you know, we were groups, you would register. You could have 20 people be registering over a single Korban Pesach. And one person slaughters it on behalf of the entire group. How does that work? But the Torah says, V'shachatu, you shall slaughter it. It has to be, Sheluchai Shel Adam Kimoisai. This is the makar of the halach of Shlichus. Now, the Riva and Rabbeinu Tam, Tosfos, they ask a question. Why did the Gemara select particularly Korban Pesach? There are other cases where we find a concept of Shlichus. For example, Egla Arufa became the hot topic to challenge this piece of Gemara. Egla Arufa, the pasuk says, it says, V'yotsu zikeinecha v'shoyfetecha umodidu el heorim asher svivoy sechololo. We have find a dead body. Asher svivoy sechololo. Maybe there's another pasuk. So it says here that you find a dead body in between two cities. The halacha demands that the zakenim, they measure the closest city. And the closest city, the elders of that city have a requirement to bring a special kaparo called the Egla Arufa. They take a calf, they decapitate it, and they recite a confession, kaper v'amcha Yisrael. Now, who is the one? Now, it's very hard work to go and make these measurements. You have to go out with special cords that are not more than 50 amos tall. Let's say there's a hill, there's a valley, exactly how to measure. There's a lot of complicated halachas. And the pasuk says, V'yotsu, they will go out, zikeinecha v'shoyfetecha. And the Gemara asks the question, why does it say zikeinecha v'shoyfetecha? Let them send the kindalach, let them send the young people to go, the zikanim, not so easy for them to go out and to make these precise measurements. And the Gemara says to teach you that in this case, you cannot appoint an agent. The zikanim themselves must be the ones to go out in the sweltering heat or in the bitter cold and get down on their knees and take these cords that are 50 amos long. And it's can be a very long, painful process to make these measurements. They may not appoint agents. It says zikeinecha v'shoyfetecha. The Gemara says to teach you. The Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin the v'yatzu hein. The word the Gemara darshens from the word v'yatzu hein v'loy shiluchan, not their agents. So the Rabbeinu Tam asked the question. So from the fact that the Gemara needs to make a drasha, that in this particular instance, the word v'yatsu is demanding they themselves do it, no one else, indicates that elsewhere, when there is a mitzvah, you don't have to do it yourself. Someone can do it for you. You can appoint an agent. So the question, this is a Rainer Thomas question, this is not Stamma Kasha or Taisvah's right. Question, why does the Gemara Masechta Kedushin make a drasha that Shluchai, the only source that we know that you can appoint an agent, Shluchai, Shel Adam Kemoisa, comes from the parish of Shechita, why can't we make a drasha, why can't we learn from the Pasuk of V'yatsu Zikeinecha V'shoyftecha, where the Pasuk says V'yatsu, in this case, only they themselves, which implies that elsewhere someone else can do it. Okay, now I'm just thinking here out loud with you, as who the Rabbi Yevsky says that all the time. I'm thinking out loud with you over here. And there's another drasha, Kain Torimu Gam Atem. There's a principle that when it comes to being mafrish teruma, the Gemara makes a drasha, Kain Torimu, so shall you separate. Gam atem. And from the word gam, the Gemara learns that you can appoint an agent to separate teruma on your behalf. You yourself do not need to be the one to separate truma. You can appoint an agent, and the Gemara makes a lot of drushas of gamatem is that just like the agent has to be similar to you, they have to be Jewish. Gam atem, gam is a drush, the word gam, to make an agent. So we presented over here at least three different drushas for shlichos, Okay, now he doesn't really touch upon the drush of gam atem, which is a little bit strange. Why? Maybe I just didn't pick it up over here, but it should be mentioned over here. All right, so we're gonna let's just try to wrap to discuss some of the issues. In a nutshell, what the thrust of this, I'm reading over from the Sefer, from the Shleimim Bitzion, as I've recently been very into the Sefer, by Felder, and he has a very big chiddush. I think his own chiddush. He says there are two types of shlichus. There's a shlichus of Bezdin, and there is a shlichus of an individual. The shlichus of Bezdin is a different type of shlichus, and what he basically says is that there's another drasha, a fourth drasha of shlichus, and that is by the chaluka of Eretz Yisrael. When they came into Eretz Yisrael, the Nesiim divided up the land. Each echad, there was a goyel. A goyel was taken. All of the Nesiim, the leaders of the Shvatim, which piece of land they're going to get. And when the Nasi selected, when they made the goyel and they did this entire process, whichever portion a Nasi of a Shevet took, what he automatically bequeathed that he was mezake, that chelik of the land, to every single member of the tribe, including the children. Okay, the words, let me read you the words of this Gemara. Okay, it's a fourth piece of Gemara. The Gemara talks about Eretz Yisrael. Okay, it's here it is, listen 1 second. V'yikhu lohem ish, that's the pasuk of karbanos. V'katanim afilu choy v'abal mizuchus. Let me just find, where is it here? Dealing over here with the Yisha of Eretz Yisrael. Let me see if I can find it here. Here it is. The Nasi Echad Mimate. Okay, this is the Gemara Masechta Kiddushin. The Amar Rava, Bar Rav Huna Amar Rav Gidl Amar Rav, Minayin Shezochin La'odam Shloi Befonav, Shnemar, The Nasi Echad, Nasi Echad Mimate. Rashi says, "Ela lezachin ladam shloi b'fanav, also the ketanim nami, the b'shloi b'fanav, v'chevan the nachalas aretz zuchus huluhem choisa chalukas and chaluka." One more. Then it goes further. V'nasiyach matel tichul v'nichos aretz shanesim hayu mimunim. The princes were assigned lechalek es aretz lechol Yisrael, to every single member of Klal Yisrael. So in essence, they were acting as the agents of the Jewish people to acquire the land on their behalf. In other words, the concept of Zochin La'odam Shaloi Befanav, when you do something good for someone else, how does that work? How does the principle of Zochin La'odam Shaloi Befanav? You're his agent. If I find in the street something, money, and I pick it up and I make a declaration, I am picking up this object on behalf of a certain person, that is called Zochin La'odam. Zochin La'odam is a sugya in itself, and here he goes to the whole sugya, and many of the Rishonim understand that the concept of doing something and bringing benefit to another person operates with the principles of shalichus, of agency. I am acting as your agent. There's money on the floor. I'm going to pick up this wild on your behalf. I am going to serve as your agent, and because it's a good thing, so why wouldn't you want me to automatically to be your agent in accomplishing something that's good on your behalf? And where do we learn that from? We learn the principle of Zochin L'Adam Shloi B'Fana from the fact that the Nesiim took possession of Eretz Yisrael, and by them taking possession, every single member of Klal Yisrael took possession, had a chelek in the land. Now here are some of the problems. Let's go, once upon a time, we learned here the sugya of Muktza. And we learned Muktza, Amira La'akum. Are you on Shabbos allowed to tell a non-Jew, turn on the lights, come into my house, the lights are off, I'm not having, there's no mitzvah, I just want the lights to be on, I want to be able to read, I can read in another room, I want to be able to go have some pleasure. I bought a new novel. I want to read this. I want to read the New York Times. You know, I'm not from the Machmirim. I want to read the FJJ Journal on Shabbos. I know some Rabbanim hold that you're not allowed to read it during the week. But I want to read it on Shabbos. So could you turn on the lights for me? There's no mitzvah here. Goy, Gentile, turn on the lights. It is categorically forbidden for me to do that. Absolutely, also to tell a non-Jew to do for you a melacha, as a melacha derabbanan, turning on the lights. Let's say it's a melacha deraisa for sure. You're not allowed to tell him to go do it. A melacha deraisa, you're not allowed to tell a guy to do if it's not just if it's not for a mitzvah, whatever they are heterim. Why not? There are, I think, four reasons why you're not allowed to tell a guy to do a melacha for you on Shabbos. There are four reasons. One of the reasons is because when he does it for you, it's as if you did it. Sheluchai shel Adam kimoise. But he's a guy. And when it comes to Teruma, the Gemara makes a drasha that the only one that can separate Teruma is a Jew. If a Jew tells a Gentile, separate, go to the silo, you anyway do everything for me, you cut the grain, you store it, you have all the tractors and the keys, so you also go into the silo and separate Terumah, separate 1/50th of the grain and put it aside, and that will be Terumah, so the remainder is no longer Tevel, and if I eat it and I sell it, I'm not going to be Chayav Misa B'nei Shemayim. Tell the guy to do for you Hafroshas Terumah. So the Gemara said it's not kosher, it's not hafrasha. If a person eats the leftovers, he's chayiv misa b'nei shemayim, because the leftovers is tevel. Why? Because it says in the pasuk, kein torimu gam aten. Just like you are a ben baris, you're Jewish, so too your agent must be a ben baris, must be Jewish. He must be chayiv in the mitzvah the same way you're chayiv in the mitzvah. If he is obligated to do, and you're obligated to do it, then we can apply the principle of him being your agent. But if he is not chayiv to do it, and you're chayiv to do it, then he cannot be your agent in doing it for you. You have this shy when it comes to being tvilas kalim. Can you give a child a utensil to be told in the mikvah? Can you do it? Okay, so the obligation falls upon the owner. The child is not the owner. He's not the owner, but he's my agent. Can you make a child into an agent? The child is not yet bar mitzvah. He's not chayiv. How can he be his agent? How can he be your agent? There are many situations when you get involved in situations where you want to make a person an agent to do a mitzvah for you, and they're not chayiv in the mitzvah. Can they be a valid agent? Certainly when it comes to a goy, that's the worst scenario, and in fact it's not kosher because it says in the pasuk gam atem. When it comes to Shabbos, you tell a goy, turn on the lights, turn on the fire, he's your agent, so l'chor you would say that it's not, you're not doing anything wrong because the goy cannot possibly be your agent. Not so fast. Some say that this concept of Kein Rigamate only applies to Truma. It does not apply to other mitzvahs. And when it comes to Shabbos has its own set of rules. And if you appoint an agent to do a Melacha D'oraisa, and the Goy does on your behalf, it's as if you yourself did the Melacha D'oraisa. Agency even by a Goy. That's how far, and that's one of the four reasons why you're not allowed to tell a guy to do malacha for you. He's doing it on your behalf. You're doing. It's as if you did the malacha. You'll say divrei harava, divrei talmud, divrei mishanim. There's a principle. If you tell a person, another element of shlichus. If you tell a person to do an avera for you, you tell a person, I want you to go on. There are two Jews. And one Jew tells another Jew, I want you to do mechal shabbos on my behalf. I want you to go and cut the grass on my behalf. and the Jew number two goes and he cuts the grass, has hasra. Is Jew number one chayiv? Absolutely not. If you tell another Jew to do an avera, we apply a principle. We say to the person, divrei harav, v'divrei hatalmid, divrei mishaimim. Who instructed you? Who instructed you to do this? The person that instructed you to do this is a servant of Hashem, and he has no power. He has no power to. You have no right to go against Hashem's will, and therefore the one that assigns and tells someone to do an avera can never be responsible for the avera when someone when it comes to agency. But when you tell a guy, then that svara does not apply. When you have two Jews and one Jew tells another Jew, turn on the lights, the one who gave the instructions cannot possibly be chayiv for chilul Shabbos, because the person that turned on the lights is an independent person, and he has an obligation to fulfill Hashem's mitzvahs, and he knows that you're not allowed to do this, so we cannot attribute his violation of halacha to the one that told him to do so. But when the one that you told to do the melacha is a Gentile who has no obligation to observe Shabbos, then there's nothing holding back that the melacha that has been done should relate to the person who gave instructions for it to be done. So telling a goy to do a melacha is worse than telling an irreligious Jew to do a melacha. Can you imagine that? How many times do you have a situation where you have a Shabbos goy? You have a Shabbos goy, and then you discover that it's not really a guy, it's really an irreligious Jew. Okay, that's a whole big topic of itself, but it turns out that you're oh, gewalt, it was an irreligious Jew. He wasn't really for years. They had this in the shul recently, in one of the shuls, they had a Shabbos guy, did everything, and it turns out that when this guy's mother passed away, some people, you know, they know to be nice, the person who, they worked so many years, they went to visit her, and they discovered that her mother was Jewish. So it turns out that she wasn't really a goy, she was an irreligious Jew. So you know something, it's really better. Because if she was a Gentile, and many of the things they tell her to do, they're not allowed to tell her to do. There's a lot of violations, a lot of ignorance in the laws of Amir Liakum. And many times when you tell a goy to do a malacha, they're really not allowed to go do that. And if you're not allowed to do it, so it turns out that it's as if you did the malacha deraisa. Because a guy is allowed to do a malach on Shabbos, and if you're telling him to do the malach on Shabbos, then the malach is going to be attributed to you. But if it's a Jew who is doing the malach on your behalf, then we apply the rule, he's a Jew, he's independent, divrei harav, divrei atalma, divrei mishamim, he should be listening to Hashem, not be listening to you, he's independent, and then the malach is not attributed to you. So when you tell an irreligious Jew to do a malacha, it's a lot better for you to, I'm just a nonsense over here, than telling a Gentile to do a malacha. Because you tell a Gentile to do a malacha, then it's as if you did the malacha. And you're not allowed to do that, unless there are very exclusive cases where the Chazal made an exception where you're allowed to tell a guy to do a malacha. But otherwise, that's one of the four reasons why you now tell a guy to do a malacha. So this is one. Now here's another element of shlichus. The Gemara asked this question. When the Nesiim took possession of Eretz Yisrael, they took possession midin Zichia. There was a goyrul, and there was an assignment with Yahushua, how to divide up the land, and each prince took a portion of the land and assigned it to every single member of the tribe, including the children. Question, how does that work? Zichia. The Nasi was acting as the agent of every member of their tribe. Wait a minute. When it comes to the principle of Zichiyah, this is many, many, many times, you only can do something that is a 100% benefit. But if there is an element in the Zichiyah that may not be a benefit, then Zichiyah does not work. And the challenge is the land that the Nesiim took, not everyone was happy with what they got. There are people who got pieces of land that were on the mountains, and they would prefer to have land in a valley. There are some people that like a warm climate, and they got territory where it's warm. There are some that like warm, they got where it's cold. There are some want to be near water, and they got in a place of desert section. Not everyone was happy with what they got. That is a fact, that is a reality. And if that's being the case, the Gemara explicitly says the only time you can say the principle of Zochin La'odam Shaloi Befanav, which most of the Rishonim understand the concept of making an acquisition for a person not in his presence, working, it works with the lumdus of you're an agent of that person, that only works if it is a pure benefit to the recipient. But if it's not a benefit to the recipient, they can say, I did not send you for my detriment, I sent you for my benefit. And what you have done is not in my benefit. I don't want what you've done for me. What you've done for me, it's not what I'm interested in. I don't want to go live in Florida. I want to live in Montreal. I don't want to live in a warm climate, a tropical climate. I like where it's cold. I like the snow. So therefore, why then did it work? So Felder, what he does here, I believe this is his own chiddush, and he says, incredible, it's an incredible yesoid, he says there's a difference between the shlichus of a bezdin and the shlichus of an individual. Egel Arufa indeed is a proof, is a revelation that there is a shlichus. The yatsu zikeinecha v'shoifetecha. The Gemara darshins v'yatsu, they and not their messengers. This is a clear indication that there is a shlichus when it comes to the court. How do you know the shlichus when it comes to the court? From the nasiim. V'nasiyecha nasiyecha mimata. That each nasi, each prince, had the power to assign territory to people all, to people, everyone in their tribe, even children. What do you mean? But the zechiyah is midin shlichus, and it's not necessarily to the benefit of the recipient. The koyach of Bezdin, their shlichus, the only difference between the shlichus of a court and the shlichus of an individual is, when the Gemara says that it has to be a pure zechus, that's only amongst individuals. A court can be your agent even if it's not a pure benefit. Even if there's an element of even if there's a detriment, you're getting a piece of land. Land, by definition, is a benefit. You have a complaint. Complaint that really, once you're dividing, I should have got a piece of land over here, and I'm not happy with my portion. If it was an individual who acquires land for you, if they're giving away land, and you have a choice of which piece of land to take up for someone else, so then you can say, this is not what I want. You can say that it's not a zechiyah for me. It's not a benefit for me. But if it's bezdin, the koyach of the zechus of bezdin is so powerful, they can do something for you, even if it is against, even if it's not a pure benefit. It's the same shlichus. Shaluchai shel adam kimaisai, provided that it's for your benefit. But when Bezdin is serving as your agent, they can be your agent even if it's not what you consider your benefit, but if it's what Bezdin considers to be a good thing. It's a different form, a different variety of shlichus. Now, here is what I just want to add to this, which to me is I find very fascinating, only because I heard a shiur about this topic, and I just want to connect the dots. Not that long ago, I heard a very interesting shiur about bris milah. We know there's a Rambam, there's a big topic of discussion. Who exactly, upon whom does it fall the obligation to circumcise a child? So we know it's a Mishnah Masechet Kedushin, mitzvah habein al ha'av. It is the obligation of a father to circumcise his son. It is the father's mitzvah. Period. Ad kidei kach, that's why many people have the custom that when at the bris milah, a moel will say to the father, you should now at this point instruct me to be your agent. It's not my mitzvah. I'm the moel here. I'm not the one that's responsible to circumcise this child. You are responsible. You do not have a license to do this. You don't know your aleph beis. You have no idea how to do bris milah. So therefore, you are hiring me to be your agent. So make it clear. Make it clear it's your mitzvah and you're asking me to be your agent. Okay? That's why it's many moelim some moelim will tell the father to explicitly say the words that I'm making you my agent, so the mitzvah is attributed to you. What happens if there is no father? Because the father, let's say, passed away, or the father is unavailable. So what does it say in the Gemara? So this is what the whole shiur was all about. It's a big, big tumult. Who is the next one in line, in succession, that has an obligation to do the bris milah? So some have a discussion, maybe it's the mother. Remember we discussed this a little bit, the mother. Maybe the mother has an obligation. Let's say the mother's not around. So the next is the bezdin. It's himol yimol lachem kol zohar. It's a pasuk. It's a pasuk in the Torah. Himol yimol. The Gemara makes a drasha. This pasuk is redundant. It's not necessary. The repetition of the words indicates is that if there are no parents, and let's not get involved in the nitty gritty of the mother. The mother is the whole shiur that I heard, it's all about the mother. Where exactly does the mother come into play in the role of bris milah? You cannot ignore the fact that Tzipora was involved in the bris milah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Where does all that apply? So the shiur was going through all of the Rishonim, the Rambam, the Ravid, and other Rishonim exactly describing exactly the nature of the mother. Is the mother acting as a representative of the father, or is the mother acting as a representative of the Bezdin? It seems that the bookends of bris milah is there's a father and there is a Bezdin. And there's also the person, by the way, the person who is the subject. But right now he's a baby. He doesn't know what's going on. And then in between there's a mother, and she also has an obligation. The question is the in between the bookends of the father and the Bezdin, is the mother acting as an agent of the father, or is the mother acting as an agent of the Bezdin? Or maybe you want to be mechadesh, that the mother is an independent entity. Let's not get involved in that. Let's take away the mother for right now. Let's forget about that. This is a Bezdin. The Bezdin, according to Rabbi Felder, when the Bezdin acts, the Bezdin, what are they going to do? They're going to send an agent. The Bezdin sees we have a child, and the child does not have a circumcision. And the Bezdin now, it becomes a din doir isa on the Bezdin. Himol yimol lechem kol zachar. They are going to appoint an agent to do the bris milah. If there was a father, then Bezdin is not involved. They're totally out of the picture. Who has the obligation to do the bris milah? The father. The father has two left hands. He doesn't know what to do. So what does the father do? He appoints an agent. That's how the Veld understands that when you have a moyel, he's the agent. The moyel is the agent of the father. Some will argue, by the way, I told you this chiddush when we learned bris milah a while ago. To me, it's a shocking chiddush, but some want to say is that the moyel should not tell the father, make me your agent, because there's no such thing. Some hold that when it comes to bris milah, adarab, there is no such thing as shlichus. And if the father... There's no such thing. The minhag ha'olam is that the father should ask the mole to be the shliach. That's the minhag ha'olam. We don't want to mess up the world. Right, the mole, a good mole will tell the father, make me your agent. But there is an approach, it's a fascinating chiddush to say such a thing, is that there is no such thing as shlichus by bris milah. If the father doesn't do it, he lost out. And when the moyel, who's there, and does it on the eighth day, the father is sitting next to him, the moyel is really acting as the bezdin. Because there's no such thing as shlichus. By milah is an exception to the principle of shlichus. That's a tremendous, tremendous chiddush. It makes the lamish of art, makes a lot of sense, but that's not the halacha. That's not what you halacha. Halacha, we assume that the same way the shlichus by bris milah, like everything else, and the father is mitzvah, and the father makes a moel, and the moel is the shlich of the father, and the father is being mekayim the mitzvah, lachnisa bevis shalamar vavinu, it's his mitzvah, it's just someone else's hands are shlich. Let's work with that assumption right now. But it comes out of tremendous chiddush according to Rabbi Felder. If the father is present, and the father appoints an agent, the agent that he appoints is is an agent, the agent that the father is appointing is a private agent. If the father is not around and Beis Din has to step in and appoint an agent, it is an agent of a Beis Din. And according to Felder, it's a completely different set of rules. And if the agent does something that is not 100% to the benefit is not 100% benefit to the recipient, then is the agency canceled? Is the agency canceled? Yes, no. Let's talk about choshen mishpat. Let's say, I'm making up crazy case, but there can be other things that are more relevant. Let's say, you know, today we know in Bris Mila, there are different ways to do Bris Mila. There are different ways to do Bris Mila, the different techniques. Different techniques, and each technique has its advantage and disadvantage. And let's say the child one day wakes up and he has a complaint that the technique that was done, there are two basic techniques. Either there's a technique where everything is completely removed, or the arla is folded over. Okay, there's a whole science. I once had a big discussion with a young moyel, and he told me some very interesting things, and I told him some things. There are different techniques. Let's say the child grows up. In the theoretical case, just to bring out a point, and the child is disturbed that tradition in his family was always to do the Bris Mila with, the results are different. Okay, the results of the way the Bris Mila looks at the end is different. And the child is disturbed that it was not done according to his family tradition. So if the agent, or let's say the father was disturbed, if the father, I'm hiring a moyel to do a Bris Mila, and I want him to do the Bris Mila technique A, and the moel openly violates the conditions, I'm saying it's not accurate. So the father can say, you know, I told you what to do, and you did not do it the way I want. You're my agent for good. You're not my agent for bad. Prayer Shul Gemara. And in my eyes, what you've done is incorrect. And therefore, you're not getting paid. Ha ha ha, you're not going to get your $800. You're not going to get paid. L'chaira, that's right. You're a private agent. A private agency works only when the event is 100% beneficial. But if the agency, but is an agency of the Beis Din, even if the recipient, which in this case would be maybe the child, you know, will say, this is not what I wanted. The technique that was employed is not to my benefit. And therefore, I want a refund. I want whatever the situation is. The Beis Din can say, the koyach of the shlichus of Beis Din is different. We can do things for you, even if there is an element of that's detrimental to you. That's what really comes out. I'm just trying to connect this where I fell this with Bris Mila. Okay, so out of time, the basic thing over here is what we take out of this is this week's parasha is a very important parasha. It teaches us the principle of shlichus. V'shachatu oisoi kol kehal adas Yisrael. The principle, it's not possible for everyone to slaughter the Karban Pesach. It automatically means you can appoint an agent. We have three more sources for agency. We have by Truma, Kain Torimu Gam Atem. And there the primary drash is, just like you are Jewish, your agent must be Jewish. Source number three, Egla Arufa. Egla Arufa, the Pasuk says that the Zakenim and the Shoftim, they have to go out themselves and measure. And the Pasuk emphasizes and makes a drash of the Yatsu, they and not their agents, which indicated on an ordinary circumstances, an agent can do agent can do, a bezin can appoint agents. We have the fourth source of the nasiyecha, nasiyecha lamata, the source that is that that the Bezdin, the Nasi, is acting basically as a Bezdin, can assign territory, the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, can give land to a person against their will, even though that person can very easily say, this is not what I wanted, it's too bad. Four sources for agency. Shabbos, when it comes to a goy of Amiru La'akum, very much centers on the principle of agency. The difference between Amiru La'akum and Amiru to an irreligious Jew. Irreligious Jew, you can never attribute that back to the person himself. The irreligious Jew, it's Divrei Harav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishamim. You're a grum, you're causing a person to do an Avera, but you can't attribute the Avera back to yourself. And then we have Rabbi Felder. He dwells upon this the multiple needs for multiple drashas. Why do we have to have so many different drashas? And in the process, he brings out this point that there are two different types of agencies, an agency of a yochid and the agency of a bezdin. And the primary difference is of a yochid has to be purely to your benefit. There are numerous gemaras that tell us that if one person makes another person an agent, it has to be 100% to the benefit of the mishaleach. Yeah, when it comes to bezdin, we don't see that so much. And the din of zechiah works midin shlichus. Obviously, it's a revelation that the shlichus, when bezdin acts as your agent, they are given a much more powerful hold, command of what they're doing, even if it's not what you consider to be to your benefit. And I tried to connect this to an example of where we have a private shlichus versus a public shlichus of a bezdin in a classic case of bris milah. Bris milah is a classic example of where a person today does not do the bris milah himself and he appoints an agent. And that agent, if you're sending a person to a bris milah, bris milah is very, very complex. There are many different things about bris milah, of what you're supposed to, what you're not supposed to do, and all these different things. And it can be chesh and mishpat, and paying a person money, and you're giving instructions to a mohel exactly how you want the bris milah to be done, and he doesn't follow the rules. He does it the way he wants to do it, and the results are irreversible in some of these things. And now you can go to a court and say, you know, I sent him to be my agent for my benefit, not for my detriment. And if he wants to, and he wants his money, I don't know what the going rate is today. What's the going rate for bris milah? There's a going rate for bris milah.
Lakewood is $500.
$500 in Lakewood. That's
cheap. Wow.
That's, well, they don't have any money there. No one has any money except for the rich people who have very fancy houses. But the average person doesn't have a penny to his name. So you want, and you have a whole din Torah, you can say, Lisakuni Shidar Tichav Loi La'avosi. I sent you for my benefit, not for my detriment. But let's say the bris milah is being performed midin the bezdin, when the father is not the one who appointed the agent. It's the bezdin appointing the sheikh. And then the people on the receiving end, the caretakers, they say they get a bill because the bezdin sent someone to the bris milah and they didn't do it the way they were told to do. Nothing you can do about it. It's a different shlichus. The shlichus of the bezdin does not work with the rule lesakune shidarticha veloy la'avasi, from my detriment. Okay, so we touched just a little bit upon some of the yisoidos of shlichus, which is a very big sugya, and again, it's rooted at least in one of the makaris in this week's parasha of Ishachar to Oisai. All right, everybody, have a wonderful day, and the Yiratz Hashem continue tomorrow. Oh my.